We're going to talk about lots of different things. If we start looking at agriculture and we start looking at it from a different perspective, is that water availability and management, and you heard our keynote speaker last night talk about the criticality of water in our environment. And we need to be focusing on this little piece at the end, is how we make every drop of water count. And we really are not paying enough attention to that. And to put it in perspective for you in terms of water security, just look at this diagram in there. And if you look at that, that we have 5% or 2.5% of the world's water is fresh water. But then you get it down to what we have in soil as 0.05% of that fresh water. And if you look at the whole perspective of increasing productivity to meet world food demand by 2050, is that in this diagram, we're not going to change the amount of water. We may melt glaciers, we may do this, but we are not going to change the amount of fresh water. So in reality, what we have is a very finite amount of water. Oh. That it's going to take to do that. If you go back and look at this relative to the diagram that Hudson put out, soil organic matter, water holding capacity within that soil becomes very critical in this, because one of the functions of soil is to store water, provide that water for plants and all of this. And so it really becomes an issue of how do we begin to manage this system, not only for water availability, but for productivity as we bring it all together. Because if you look at this from a food security point of view, here's water security, here's food security. If you look at this diagram that CSIRO presented a few years ago, and if you're really good at math, you understand that that light blue area is as big as the dark blue area. It means in the next 50 years, we're going to have to produce as much food as we produced in the last 500 years. And we're going to do that with the same amount of water that's out there, and we're going to do it with an ever-increasing availability of land area to produce that crop on. One of the secrets that we don't want to talk about is the fact that we continue to degrade our soil resource. We're degrading our soil resource, we're reducing the organic matter content, we're reducing water holding capacity. It means that we become more susceptible to every variation of weather that occurs within the growing season. And that in alone should cause you cause for concern about how we're going to manage some of these things as we go into the future. So I want to spend just a little bit of time on the dynamics of water relative to agricultural systems. Just a simple little diagram. Here's the soil water balance. What was available in that soil is dependent upon precipitation and irrigation, and then the losses that are out there, whether they're BET, drainage, leak runoff across that surface as well. So what we've got stored at any particular point in time is a function of how much is going up, how much is going off, how much is going down. And it's just like a checkbook. Unfortunately, as I tell producers, unlike the federal deficit, you cannot overspend your budget. When you run out of water, the crop dies, or anything else that's trying to live on it. If you look at it from this perspective relative to ET, soil water evaporation, plant transpiration being the two components that we have in terms of ET, they're driven by how much energy we get, how much the water vapor gradient between the atmosphere and the soil, the wind speed gradient, how fast the wind blows, but it's governed by how much water is available within that soil profile and how those plants can get that, extract that water out of it. So what we have in terms of an actual ET is dependent and throttled by that soil water availability. Everything else is potential. That's what the atmosphere wants. Soil determines how much the atmosphere gets. It's very simple in terms of looking at that overall process. If we look at fluxes coming on and see these diagrams, is that we have a certain amount of net radiation, we have a lot of water flux coming back up in a really well-watered canopy. We move a lot of that water from the soil back to the atmosphere. As we begin to dry, we can see that we, and soybeans, we see the same thing. But the piece of this is, how do we couple water and the carbon together? Because when we look at an agricultural system, it's really about how we extract water out of that profile, how do we utilize it to optimize the carbon extraction from the atmosphere to grow plants, convert those plants into grain or whatever else we're going to do with them that's out there. And that really becomes the aspect of how do we think about food security, how do we begin to think about these overall pieces. We see all sorts of variation. Everybody wants to draw these stylized diagrams between net radiation, ET, sensible heat, soil heat flux, and everything else. But in reality, they're extremely dynamic. They're extremely dynamic because they're dependent upon the soil that we're really talking about. That 0.05% that we talk about in the freshwater balance that goes into the soil is only an approximation, because we've got soils that hold lots of water and we've got soils that hold very little water. Clays versus sands, a number of different things that go on this. This is just one experiment that we did in central Iowa in 2002, where we had eddy correlation systems across 14 different fields. You look at all this variation, and that variation is dependent upon two things. One was precipitation differences, but mostly driven by what soil was available within that field. So it really becomes a question when we're going to think about this balancing, this freshwater piece of this and our soil piece of it, is now getting into the role that all of us as humans are really good at, manipulation. Is how do we think about manipulating this water balance? And I just use a simple little piece of this, and that is reducing the evaporation component out of the total ET component. And because the evaporation component, although it's extremely effective and everything else, does nothing for plant productivity, but it does a lot for the atmosphere. And so when we think about reducing E out of ET, it's one of the goals of conservation agriculture. And we do that and begin to see just how important this is. Seed that grain crop into a standing wheat stubble. We really do alter that. That bare soil in between, rain event evaporates a lot of water back out. It's good for cooling, not for so much for plant productivity. And then we see a lot of this, and it's hard to see on that, but this is actually a field of cotton that has drip lines laid across it. So here we manipulate the whole water balance by changing in a dry land area or a semi-arid area just how much water is available for evaporation by changing the amount of water that's available at the surface as well. And we see that in terms of altering this system. And so we see a lot, if you look through the literature, humans have been very, very good at thinking about how we alter the water balance. And conservation agriculture, our changing irrigation systems are all part of this. If you guys also think about this reduction of evaporation out of ET, is that the residue layer that we put across the soil surface will reduce that evaporation component by anywhere from 50 to 80%. So we do make our precipitation much more effective. And we think about how do we look at that residue layer compared to bare soil as well. And if you put a crop into a standing stubble, we've completely altered the whole microclimate. Microclimate's entirely different within that standing stubble than it is over bare soil. If you go out and you begin to look at this, what we find is that that standing stubble reduces the wind speed, it reduces the soil temperature at the surface, increases the humidity around that, makes it an entirely different environment for that young plant to exist in. And it completely alters how that plant utilizes water. And we see major differences in the size of those plants, the water use efficiency of those plants, just by the simple fact that all we've changed is the wind speed. So you begin to see the dynamics of all of this. And when we get into semi-arid environments, we've underestimated just how important it is, that simple fact of changing wind speed in terms of the water balance, in terms of the dynamics that are out there. If we look at this from a stable microclimate, this is about 40% residue, and this is about less than 10% residue on that surface, is that the simple illustration in there at that soil surface, and this is Iowa, that soil surface temperature will be anywhere from 120 to 130 degrees because we have dark soils in there. 120 to 130 degrees are way above 104, which we denature protein. So basically, when we start getting these bare, dry soils, is we cook the biology out of that soil surface. And once we cook the biology out of that soil surface, we destroy aggregates. We no longer have the capability of maintaining that aggregate structure. And so what we see is those soils really become less effective in terms of rainfall events. And we see that. We get these high rainfall events, plus 2 inches during a day, is that we see runoff occurring very quickly because the surface seals. And they surface seals because what we've done is we've made that system less responsive to the fact of how we manage the water out there. Does that help producers? It's not how much rain you get in the rain gauge, it's how much rain you get into the soil. And when we think about the water balance, it really gets to that point of looking at the dynamics of all of this. And so changing this overall structure of the soil is one place that we got to look at relative to water security. If we just look at water and crops, and we've spent a lot of time on this, and that solid line across there in a theoretical diagram is the water use efficiency line. The more water we can put through that plant, the higher the productivity is out there. Combination of how we grow that plant, also a combination of how we've influenced the microclimate. If I can do the same thing with nutrients and light from that perspective. This just happens to be some real data, not a theoretical piece of this. This is the water use efficiency line. It's across the 5 years of data across a particular field. This is water use, and we've back calculated out. So this is just transpiration. This is not ET. This is just transpiration. You see a line that's fit through there. That's through the 150 kilogram per hectare nitrogen rate. This is all done with flux measurements across fields. But you see there's a whole lot of data points that are below that line. And there are a lot of data points below that line because we have not achieved water use efficiency, or we've achieved inefficiency in that system, each way you want to think about it. And it's because we often don't think about the dynamics that happen within a field and how we're managing our water supply. Those points that are below that are anything from high nitrogen rates to low nitrogen rates, everything else. But what it is the fact that across a lot of our systems is that we're water limited at various times of the season. And we just happen to be water limited during the grain filling period. We've invested water into that plant, but we have not got a return out of the plant in terms of grain yield. We grew a really nice looking corn plant, but we didn't get a yield out of it. And so we become inefficient because of the seasonality of the precipitation events that are occurring. And when we have low water holding capacities in that soil, and so we become water limited in that late fall period or late summer period, is that's when we have these inefficiencies that are appearing. So we've got to think about the dynamics of what happens in terms of the overall precipitation. So we look at water use efficiency, and I spent a lot of time on how we can improve water use efficiency. It really depends upon the ability of that crop to produce more growth or use less water per unit of growth. And when I talk about changing now for food security, it's really about we're not going to store much more water within that profile, which means that we're going to have to figure out how to put more water back into that crop and convert it into grain very, very efficiently. And so these dynamics really become very, very important. If you look through the literature, water use efficiency has remained relatively constant. We get a little variation across the experiments. For the most part, it's fairly consistent because of the genetics and the management that we have with that. So if the slope is consistent, the best approach is to modify the soil water balance. And you modify that soil water balance by reducing the evaporation component out of it. You see that in drought years across the Midwest. Producers that have residue layers across that in 2012, the last drought year that we had, but not the last drought year. If you look at that, what we see is those that had reduced evaporation had higher yields. They also were able to take advantage of every light rainfall that occurred. So as agriculturalists, we're going to have to start thinking about how do we begin to change the dynamics of the overall system so that we allow that crop to become more efficient. If we just look at this whole variation that's out there, you look at all the different crops, this comes from FAO. Alfalfa has some requirement that's between 800 and 1600 millimeters during the whole growing season. Sunflower is up to about 1,000, sugar canes 2,500, means that that's really where we're going with high water events. And you get into something like small grains in there, we're at 600 millimeters. Corn is about 800 millimeters, and that's in really high rainfall areas. So we're going to have to go back and begin to understand the dynamics of what crops, how they use that, and how are they looking at that water partitioning throughout the whole growing season. Just give you an example of this. This is a little analysis that we did across Kentucky, Iowa, and Nebraska. Each one of these data points represents the average of 40 years of county-level data. This is NAS data, so there's a lot of data points that go into this, a lot of data that goes into this. What you find is the average county yield is dependent upon the National Crop Commodity Productivity Index. It's basically an index that describes the capability of that soil to hold water and make it available to that crop. You can plot the same way if you look at water holding capacity of these soils. That behaves very linearly, except for Nebraska. And it's not because Nebraska knows how to grow soybeans any better, is that we cherry-picked, and these are only the irrigated counties. So if you can irrigate when that crop needs it, soils don't have much of an impact. But if you're dependent upon rainfall to supply the water to grow that crop, the quality of that soil is number one. And how do we get that soil to behave like this? Because when I work with producers, one of the things that I see is that they manage their soils as they're on that high end of that. But in reality, they've got soils within their fields that are at the low end. And so they're putting lots of inputs into it, they're expecting high yields out of it, and yet their water supply doesn't allow them to achieve that high yield. And they become very vulnerable to any variation of weather during that season. If you get that perfect growing season, you get a good yield. Anything less than perfect, you begin to suffer. We saw the same thing with maize yields across that. And if you look at this crop commodity productivity index across the Midwestern or 80 Midwestern states, you see that Iowa, Illinois, parts of Indiana, really good soils start moving into Minnesota, moving down to Missouri. You see in the lesser soils, and we see that reflected in the county average yield, as well as the variation among years. And so this whole index allows us to begin to assess just how effective we are at using water relative to agriculture as we look across the Midwest. If you look at it and extend it even farther, because we've pushed the Corn Belt into North Dakota and South Dakota for lots of different reasons, but we're pushing it into soils that are going to become very susceptible to any weather variation. And we see that. We see lots of fluctuation over time. The piece of this that we need to really understand, going back to this effective precipitation piece, is just really what does our soil environment mean. And it's not this whole profile. It's the upper half inch. It's the upper half inch that's really determining how effective we are in terms of getting precipitation into that soil. And if you look at this low biological activity soils in terms of changing that soil aggregate structure, and we look at this and we begin to look at these dynamics as we begin to rain on that soil, and if it's not stable, it begins to melt right away, it dissolves. What we end up with is lots of runoff, and we see that in fields where we have low aggregate stability, is that we see runoff occurring after 1 inch of rainfall. This is really good news if you only get 1 inch of rainfall. But if you get 2 inches, you still only get 1 inch of rainfall. Everything else is gone. And you see that in fields where you see the little micro movement and things like this. You get this stable aggregate out there with high biological activity, is that become quite resistant to that. We see the high infiltration rates appearing in all of this. That's why I say that this whole aspect of what temperature is doing at the surface and how we're maintaining the biologic activity is really important to how we think about stabilizing this. Because our variation of yields within a field are really dependent in rain-fed areas on how much water is available to that. And these green areas are really poor soils that really lack the amount of water within them. And we see this when we look at yield gaps across the Midwest. This just happens to be Story County. That upper line is potential or attainable yield. This is actual county yield, and then a dashed line is the yield gap. And what we find when we start looking at fraction of attainable yield is that we're losing 20% of our crop 80% of the time because of short-term water stresses. And we can do that by changing and getting more infiltration into that, just getting a little more water storage. And when we begin to do that in fields, we see that advantage. These yield gaps, you see, and looking across the Iowa, across all the different cropping districts, you get low rainfall and you get excessive rainfall causing us problems as well. So you look at this whole water impacts on crops. Deficit soil water reduces productivity. Excessive soil water reduces productivity. And more we see that occurring because of these shifting seasonality of precipitation. The more spring precipitation is really limiting our growth more than we think. And if we don't have that soil structure in a way that allows oxygen exchange back and forth, we see a lot of stunted crops and we see reduced yield potential. So we're going to figure out in agriculture how we manage water to achieve maximum productivity. We're going to figure out how to do that. And all of this, we can go back to this curve in terms of organic matter relative to the soil water availability. Gives us one starting point, but it's really about how do we manage it much more than that. Soil water use rates are different across soils within that. And if we want to take corn yields from 200 to 300 bushel, it's going to take another 150 to 200 millimeters of water to do that. So we'll leave it with that. But really, here's the punchline, is that soil security means water security in agriculture, in rain-fed agriculture. If we got to figure out how to improve our soils, protect our soils, because the water security is really how we equate to food security. But unfortunately, what we find is a population growth is occurring in areas of the world with the most fragile and degraded soils. And so we're food insecure because of the soil problem. And then we're going to have an unequal distribution of capacity for food production and population growth. We'll see more insecurity in areas that become there. So these vulnerable areas of the field or the world are going to be quite important when we start looking at soil degradation in all these pieces. So here's our challenges. We've got to improve our soils to capture and store soil water. We've got to reduce the evaporation component to make more water available for transpiration. We're going to have to rediscover soil management and practices associated with soil management related to water management to ensure food security. We can't continue to just parse out pieces. We're going to have to look at it much more holistically than what we've been doing. Purpose of this slide is that we're only a small part of the water supply, and we need to make the most of every drop. So, thank you.